Nathan Fraser Show, episode number 93, How to Turn Your Clients and Customers into Raving Superfans with Pradeep Sangha.
Mixing business with politics. This is the Nathan Fraser Show.
All right, free market squad in the place to be. Thank you for taking a half hour out of your week to hang with me. My name is Nathan Fraser. I am the high priest of propaganda. And today we have a very special guest. We've got Pradeep Sangha. I feel like I'm butchering your last name. Did I get it?
You're pretty close. You're like 95% there. It's all good.
Can you pronounce it for the listeners?
Sure, it's Sangha.
Sangha. Awesome. Thank you for joining me. And I'm excited to have you on. I just got your book last week and I've listened to it 3 times. You sent me the audio version of it and phenomenal book. I'm so excited to have you on. For the listeners that don't know who you are, I wanted to kind of give you a little bit of a background because you don't have, you've got an interesting background story. So, obviously your name Pradeep, it might indicate that you're not the average white bread internet marketer.
No, not at all. Obviously, my background is Indian. My parents immigrated here from India back in the 70s.
Can you tell us a little bit about that story? Because one of my favorite things about the whole entrepreneurial journey that you hear about in the West is people that come from one country or one area, and they take advantage of things that most people here take for granted. So can you tell us a little bit about what kind of growing up here was like?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So my parents, obviously, as I mentioned, they immigrated back in the early 70s. And my parents virtually had no education, and they ended up in a place called Kelowna, British Columbia, which is it's a beautiful place. It's absolutely gorgeous. But at that time, there weren't very many jobs, and the jobs that were available were in the orchards. And so that was manual hard labor, and my parents were used to that coming from India. That's pretty much, you know, all they knew how to do. So they started working for someone in the orchard, and us as 2 young kids, so my brother and myself, we grew up on the orchard since we were kids. I can remember when I was a baby literally being put in an apple bin while my parents were working. So I learned real hard from my parents. You know, they drilled it into me, work hard, get an education, do something so you don't have to do the hard labor. And that's how I grew up, was basically seeing my parents struggle making minimum wage for the first, I can't remember exactly how long, but for a very good part of their adult lives, they were working for minimum wage. And that stuck with me for a very long time.
Now, did they eventually move past that and start their own business?
Yeah, absolutely. So once there was a point in their times where they, at a point in their time when they got tired and they said they need to do this for themselves. And I was actually part of that conversation as well. And they started in down that path and they're successful as a result of that. And so for myself, I really am proud of my parents for what they've been able to accomplish with you know, coming to Canada with virtually nothing and having no education to where they are right now. And that's really what drives me today. And that's why I have such a huge passion for helping entrepreneurs and business owners succeed, because I take a look at what my parents went through, and they went through a lot of struggles learning how to run a business the hard way. And they probably could have avoided a lot of pitfalls and enhanced their business in many ways had they had the proper guidance and had someone there to coach them and guide them and give them the ins and outs. And that's why I help business owners myself, because I have a lot of experience in that area. And my mission is to help business owners grow their business and improve their personal lives as well, because I know what it's like to live in a family where there's tough times and what it's also like when things go well. So I want every person to be able to experience that.
So tell us a little bit about your personal journey from growing up and then venturing out into, I'm assuming you started off with a corporate job and then eventually transitioned into what you're doing now, which is kind of like more of an entrepreneurial venture. Let my listeners know a little bit about what that was like.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned, my parents were working their butts off all the time, and they were really adamant about my brother and I getting a good education. So from the very beginning, we did very well in school. And because of that, my parents were also, it's kind of funny because Indian parents that immigrate here, they want you to become one of several professions. You either be a doctor, lawyer, dentist, or an engineer. That's typically what happens. And my parents wanted me to be a doctor. So I went into university, into sciences, thinking that that was my path. And inside, I really knew that that wasn't for me. But I wanted to do it for my parents because they had worked so hard. And partway through, before I even finished my degree in biochemistry, I switched over to finance and business and then got into the corporate career and was in the corporate world for 14, 15 years. And I worked my way up through the ranks. And the last good part of my career was as an executive. And I was a very successful executive at that time, but something wasn't working for me. My calling was something else. And I knew that. And one day I literally just walked into work and said, I'm done. And everybody at work, including my parents and my family, thought I was crazy. They thought I had lost a nut. They thought I just went overboard. But for me, it was really following my passion, which was to help business owners. And that's what I do today.
Nice. So I've been through your website and I was kind of researching you before we got on the call. And one of your clients, one of the people that you work with or that you've worked with in the past, is actually like one of my personal heroes. I saw that you worked with Frank Kern. Can you kind of tell us how that came into being and where that was at in your journey?
Wow. It was one of those things where I had some clients after I had left the corporate world, but no one that was really high profile. I had some very successful business owners, but Frank was my first client that was really high profile. And I literally just went to Frank and had sat down with Frank to learn more from Frank. He, obviously, you know, he's a copywriting guru. He knows what to do when it comes to marketing on the internet. And my business was all about one-on-one referrals at that time. And I was taking a look at how do I get more exposure on the internet? Because I wanted to help more business owners. And the one-on-one referrals, obviously, it's limited. So I went to Frank to learn from him. And as we were having a conversation, there was something that he wanted to do for his business. And he literally just said, you need to work for me. Hmm. And it was pretty uncanny because I literally said, okay. He literally cut me a check and said, I want you to do this right away. Let's get on it. And away we went.
Nice. That's so awesome. So we've kind of teased at what you do, but what you do is, in my opinion, you kind of do the next level stuff. There's a lot of entry-level business management and entry-level marketing type things. And what you do is kind of like, once you've got that entry-level stuff in place, there's this next level of taking customers and not just having like a customer acquisition program and constantly going through the process of going out and getting new customers. You take what most business owners are focused on and they stop at that point. That's where you come in and you kind of take it to the next level. You take that next step. So your book is all about how to create super fans. What is the difference between a super fan and a regular customer? And why is it important that businesses don't stop at just customer acquisition?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question because I think this is the biggest thing that can impact a business owner and an entrepreneur and actually take their business from being average to being the top of their industry. And when you take a look at, I can spit all these stats at you, Nathan, but if we keep it real here, it's really about taking a client that's doing business with you currently and turning them into a raving advocate. And there's a big difference. And this is something I notice when I talk to business owners is, first of all, I'll ask them how many of their clients are super fans, and they really don't know. They consider if a client or a customer repurchases from them, that they're a super fan. And that's not necessarily the case. So super fans, they're the ones that continuously buy from you regardless of your pricing. So they're willing to pay a premium as well. They're the ones that are literally proactive on social media raving about you. And they're the ones that are completely loyal. And they also send referrals. So you may have been in this situation, Nathan, or you've come across something. You know, when you deal with a business that does such an amazing job, you're like, these guys are awesome. And then you may be talking to a family member or a friend that has that specific need. Well, you immediately direct them to that business. And you tell them, no, you have to use this guy or this gal or this business because they're phenomenal. And you make every effort that you can to make sure that that person uses that business's services. That's the difference. And most people don't understand that. There's actually a science and art behind it. But it's really what's led to, you know, if we take a look at the big companies, we've talked about Apple, Zappos is another big one. Those are companies, Netflix is another prime one. Those are companies that have built themselves off of creating superfans.
So there's a bunch of different ways that we can go with this, but I kind of want to hone in on, from a marketing point of view, one of the things that I know that's really important is having a referral system in place. Whenever I work with businesses, whenever I'm working on my own businesses, that's one of the things that I really focus on is, after I've delivered a good experience for my customers, how do I get them to go out and refer me? Sometimes it's gentle nudges. Sometimes it's incentive programs. What you're talking about, though, is not how do I incentivize them to do it. How do I provide them an experience where they're almost compelled to take it upon themselves to go out there and refer my business to other people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly the case, because you can incent people to refer all you want, but people will only refer if they believe that A, there's a lot of money in it for them, or B, they're doing the person that they're referring a favor. And that is the bigger point for them. If I know that I'm doing one of my family members or friends a favor by sending them to a specific business, I look like the hero. But I need to be confident that that business can execute. And that's really what you hit it bang on. If you deliver an amazing experience to your clients are almost obligated to tell the people around them.
Nice. So you mentioned Netflix, and Netflix was one of those businesses that was very disruptive. It came in, it completely just destroyed the previous business model. What gave Netflix the ability to come in and just completely destroy, like, giant established brands like Blockbuster?
Well, there's really two things. One is the ignorance on Blockbuster's side. And Blockbuster had the opportunity to buy Netflix in the early stages, and they had the opportunity to create a massive infrastructure and technology to blow Netflix out of the water. But they chose not to, because they already had the market share. They already had people's eyes and ears, and we're literally talking about hundreds of thousands and millions of clients. So they were ignorant and a little bit arrogant. So that's one thing that helped Netflix, because they went underneath the radar of Blockbuster. But the other thing is that Netflix provided an experience that Netflix provided an experience that Blockbuster didn't provide. Blockbuster stuck with their old way of brick and mortar, where Netflix went to, hey, look, we'll send you the movies and don't worry about late charges. And that's something that was a huge, huge pain point for people. And I remember renting DVDs back from Blockbuster, and if I got a late charge, I'd be so pissed off, Nathan. And you might've been in that same situation. So that really bugged their clients, and Netflix took that out of the equation. So if you can take pain points out of the experience that you provide for your clients that they're feeling somewhere else, you're going to create super fans. And that's what Netflix did. They took away the pain points and added more convenience. And that's what led to their success.
Now, I want to kind of take that and spin it off in a different direction. I'm going to go to kind of an anecdotal experience of my own. I have probably like an unhealthy fetish with wristwatches. It's one of the few luxury items that I buy myself that I really indulge in. And I'm not going to name the company, but there's one company that it doesn't really matter to me how much, how expensive the watch is going to be, because you mentioned the experience that you get. And there's one brand of watch that every time I've bought a watch from them, it comes in just like a really nice sturdy package. I order them online. When they come in, they're inside of this like really fancy display. They come on like this velvet pillow. The display is super high class looking. The packaging is awesome. When you open up the package, it just looks like, it's probably only 10 or 15 extra dollars that they put into the whole packaging process, but it just adds this like luxury feeling to unveiling this watch. And ever since I've bought a watch from this particular company, almost every watch that I've bought since then has come from, and this company's not like, it's not Rolex, it's not one of the bigger named ones, but their packaging process, their experience that they deliver when it comes in the mail is superior to some of these other bigger brand companies. So even though I don't get the status symbol, the experience that I get from them it turned me into a fan for life. And that kind of sounds like what you're talking about. Blockbuster had the status, but the experience that Netflix delivered turned their people into fans, where Blockbuster seemed to maybe forget how important that was.
Absolutely. And just to add to that, We've gotten to a stage here with technology and the way things are that your product as service can be replicated within weeks, if not months. So those days of having a unique product or service, those are gone. So as you mentioned, the watch that you have, maybe it's not a Rolex, but the difference is the experience. And that's what differentiates one company from another these days. That is the biggest thing that you could, as a business owner, you can do to differentiate yourself from your competition is provide what I call one of three things. A, you provide an experience that your competition doesn't provide. B, you provide an experience that is better than your competition. And if you really want to blow your competition out of the water, you do both. You provide an experience that's better and you provide an experience that your competition doesn't. So you just nailed it. Those are the companies that are getting ahead these days because they're hitting those emotional points. All of that packaging is doing is really triggering emotions within you that make you feel special, that make you feel important, and that it's not just another product or service, that this business actually appreciates your business.
Yeah. And like I said, it's not the biggest status watch, but when I decide I need to buy a new watch, they're the first website that I go and check out. So I want to kind of roll this back a little bit, and I want to talk about something that I found to be incredibly important, which is the onboarding process. They say you never get a second chance to make a first impression. When you're bringing people on at the very beginning of their customer journey with you, what are some things? Is it important to worry about creating super fans? I guess my first question, is it important to worry about creating super fans even at that first point of contact? And if so, what are some of the things that you can do during your onboarding process to help really create that super fan?
Yeah, absolutely. So to answer your first question, yes, absolutely. It is so important to create a super fan right off the bat, because if you start with a bang and you totally get them on board with the experience that you want them to have, they're more likely to stay a super fan. Mm. And if you, let's just say if you don't, it's tougher to create a super fan 6 months down the road, because those first 3 months are really when they have that excitement, what I call the first 90 to 100 days. They're excited about doing business with you. There's always a new there's always that feeling of excitement when you do business with a new vendor, or if you're going on a new website and purchasing stuff. So you need to take advantage of that, because that's when they're most likely to refer as well, because it's within that first 100 days. So if you can turn them into super fan, most likely you'll get some referrals out of that as well. Now, the reason why I also, to add on top of that, is it's like pushing a, the analogy I use is it's like pushing a snowball up a hill. If you're not creating a super fan right off the bat, that's what you're doing essentially. If you're trying to do it 6 months down the road, good luck, because it's a lot harder to push that snowball up the hill. But if this, if you start at the top, if you create a super fan right off the bat, then pushing that snowball down the hill is super easy. And that's all you need to do. If you start off good, all you need to do is maintenance. That's pretty much all you need to do as a business owner.
Nice. So now, you get that leverage.
Yes, exactly. Now, what you can do in order to do that is, first, what I always say is have a consistent experience within the first 90 days. There's nothing worse than getting a great experience when you buy something, and then let's just say you're trying to call up customer service or support and you're sitting on the line for an hour. So that will kill the experience right there, and that will kill your the super fan immediately. So you need to have a consistent experience. If you're providing timely service right off the bat, continue to do that, because that will set that the expectation, which is the second part. You need to set the expectations for your clients in order for them to become super fans. And a big thing to remember is if you don't set expectations, people will create their own expectations. So if you don't tell, for example, I'll use a simple example. If you have an email support line, and if you don't tell your clients that you'll respond within 4 hours, for example, they'll automatically assume that you should be responding to them within an hour, or maybe even sooner. So set those expectations, and if possible, exceed them. So if you're saying that you're going to get back to them within 4 hours, get back to them within 3 hours, because that exceeds expectations. And that's really the secret about behind creating a superfan, is if you set the expectation and you exceed it, people automatically get that oxytocin boost within their body. It's a chemical response in your brain that actually happens. But the reverse happens if you don't meet expectations. It actually creates a chemical reaction in your brain that's similar to fear. And if you start creating that chemical on a regular basis within your clients, they'll actually physically feel fear doing business with you. And that's not what you want, because they'll take off right away. But the other part that I would say is know your client's story. And if you have a new client, get to know that person. And not just on the surface, don't get to know them by name and how much business they're doing with you. Get to know what they're all about. And Nathan, just like you asked me about my background, for example, the same goes for your clients. Ask them a little bit about themselves. Ask them to tell you what their background is. Do they have family? You know, what their interests are. And this is this information is critical, because that's how you create that emotional connection. And that emotional connection is how you really create a loyal, lifelong superfan. So you should be taking all of that information and putting it into a customer relationship management tool that houses that. And at some point in time, you're going to want to use that information to make your superfans feel special. And an example may be, if you find out when their anniversary is, send them an anniversary card. Or if you find out what their pet's birthday is, for example, I have a dog myself and I love my dog. And if someone found out when my dog's birthday was and they actually sent a card, I'd be like, wow, this business is pretty cool. Like, they took the time to actually remember that. So those are the little things that go a long way.
And those, both of those examples, it's like a 97 cent card and 50 cents of postage, and that $1.50 can just make an incredible impact on the experience.
Oh yeah. You know what? That's one thing. When I talk to business owners, they're always afraid, like, okay, what is this going to cost me? Like, how much is it going to cost me to create superfans? And I tell them that it's a return on investment. because for every dollar that you put in, you're going to get way more than a dollar in return. So great point. A dollar card, a 97 cent card, can get you a lifelong client or customer. So what is that worth to you?
And something that we kind of skipped over, and I think it'd be this would be a good time to go back and touch on it. In marketing, I know that getting that first purchase from people is always so much more expensive than getting return purchases. The amount of money that you have to spend to get somebody in your store the first time is usually like almost 10 times as much as it costs to get them in there the second time. So I guess that 97 cents or that $1.50 to get somebody back in your store to make a repeat purchase or to get them in there making repeat purchases over and over again, it doesn't make sense. But so many businesses are only focused on that first initial sale and completely ignore what you're talking about, which is turning those people into lifelong customers.
Yeah, and I call it spinning the wheel, because we're so inundated with marketing these days that business owners are, I don't want to say fooled, but I will use that term, fooled, because they believe that every new client or customer is what's going to drive their business success. And that's not the case. Business success, if you take a look at it, is actually based on client or customer retention and repeat business. So, and I've run a fairly large marketing department with a large budget, and I know just from crunching the numbers that 50% of the money that you put out in marketing just goes to waste. It's hit and miss. Because A, if you can target the right people, you're okay, that's good in the first place, but only 25% of those people are even likely to buy if you target the right people. And the statistics compared to your existing clients and customers, they're up to 80% more likely to buy than new clients. So where do you want to focus your attention and your energy and your dollars? It really should be on repeat business. And I can't remember who said it. It was one of the business gurus or coaches out there that talked about all you need is 1,000 raving fans or 1,000 super fans that continue to buy off of you, and that will grow organically.
Yeah. Let's kind of talk about what's going on in the world today, because it seems like there's a lot of really big businesses that maybe don't focus very much on this, what I see is super important. And I'm wondering, maybe once you get to a certain point, maybe they just don't see it as super important anymore. And the reason why I say that is there's a lot of businesses now that are focusing on how can we cut costs? That's their biggest priority. Who can we cut out? How can we replace people with automation? Whose job can we cut and replace them with a robot or an automated process? Whose hours can we cut? What benefits can we cut? How do we make this business more profitable by cutting costs? And something that I've noticed is, like, when you walk into your local Walmart, the employees their hours are being cut. The amount of people working each position are being cut. Their attitude towards the job is they're not proud to work there. They're not happy to be there. And that creates a really bad experience for me, the customer. And I can't see that that's profitable for, I mean, I understand that they're cutting costs, but they're creating a bad experience and it's making me want to go shop somewhere else. So is there a disconnect, or is there a point where at a certain point you just become so profitable that you don't have to worry about the experience that your customers are having anymore? What am I not seeing there?
Great question. I think what's happened, and obviously times are changing. If you take a look at Walmart, for example, and the big box stores, or anybody that's on a stock exchange, their end goal at the end of the day is to really produce profit for their shareholders. If they don't produce profit, then their business goes under. And so their whole goal, their whole aim, and I see this all the time with businesses, is they are trying to cut costs to increase their profits to make their shareholders happy. Now, is that sustainable long term? I don't think it is, personally, because if you take a look at the top 100 companies today, majority of them did not exist even 50 years ago. So things are changing quite fast. So what's happening, though, is on the flip side, you see businesses that want to create an experience for their clients and continue to create an experience. They're amping it up from their brick and mortar side. And I'll just, you know, one of the examples that I share is, and I like to share this because my wife's a big fan of Harry Rosen. She's a shopper and she goes there all the time. And she, for her, I wish she did pay attention to how much she spent, make my life a little bit easier, but she loves the experience that they provide. And that's really where they've nailed it. They provide an experience that no one else is able to match. And therefore, they can stay in business and have a brick and mortar location. Whereas Walmart, I think, is whenever you get into a price war, you're never going to win. You're never going to win. So what's happening now is you're seeing a big disconnect. The people that are cutting costs are cutting a lot of costs, and the people that want to create an experience are continuing to create an experience. So there's a big change in the market that you're seeing happen right now, and I think it's going to really flush itself off over the next 5 years. If you've heard the news that Toys R Us is going out of business as well, it claimed bankruptcy, that's another big example. What Toys R Us failed to do was they had an easy opportunity to create additional market share and maintain their existing market share by just providing a great experience for people that came in, the families that actually want to go into a physical store to buy toys. And I know I have two young kids, 4 years old and 2 years old, and I actually love taking them to the store to buy toys rather than doing it online. For me, it's not fun to do it online because I want to see their faces when they're picking the toys out. But I can tell you one thing, every time I walked into Toys R Us, it was like misery. No one was happy in there. No one really went out of their way to help us out. We would just walk around the store like it was almost like walking around Walmart. And that's why they're going out of business too, because if you're not going to provide a great experience, if people are physically coming into your store, you're going to go out of business real soon.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I don't know if you guys have Chick-fil-A up where you're at, but if you go to a Chick-fil-A here in the States, when you walk in, all of the people working there are smiling, they're happy to help you. They ask your name. They want to know a little bit about you. They ask how your day's going. They're super cheerful with you, as opposed to if you walk into maybe a McDonald's, which I'm not recommending people eat at any of these places, but but the experience is different. And the way that the employees, I'm assuming it's the way that the employees are treated, then it kind of reflects in the way that they treat their customers and the type of people that they attract. It's just a totally different class of people. Some people just want a cheap 99-cent hamburger. Some people want to feel like they're important when they go buy their chicken sandwich. So, I think that, I don't know. It just scares me that, so many businesses don't understand and it's weird that they were able to get so big, not understanding how important that experience is, but going forward into the future, I'm not very confident about their ability to maintain their status as these dominant players in the game, because nowadays, us as consumers, we have more choice.
Nathan, yeah, if I could just make one point on that. For business owners out there and entrepreneurs, this is one way you can absolutely differentiate yourself. And this is a huge opportunity. If you have a physical location and you really go out of your way to create that amazing experience for your customers, your clients, you have a one-up on everybody else. And so while people are saying, oh, well, you have a physical store, like how do you afford that? And people are afraid of that. And you see stores closing. Well, if you take advantage of this and you create more locations with better experiences, you're going to be better off in the long run.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that maybe these bigger businesses have just forgotten about with all the focus on cutting costs and going online. And I don't know, man, it's It's kind of a scary situation for a lot of businesses right now. I have one question, and when you say superfans, one company really springs to mind and has kind of dominated the mental space of superfan for many years, and that's Apple. For a long time, when people who knew about this superfan concept, when you brought it up, the first company they would think about was Apple, and their biggest competition was Samsung. And Samsung had an issue a couple years back with the exploding cell phones, and they lost a lot of credibility. A lot of people were afraid to buy Samsung products, but it seems like they've kind of earned that superfan status back from Samsung fans. But in the past year or so, Apple seems to kind of fallen from grace a little bit. There was recently news about how they were secretly downgrading the ability for their phones, for older phones, to process and work correctly. There's been people have complained that both of the two iPhones that have come out in the past 6 months or whatever, that they're just not worth the money that people are paying for. And I have a couple of friends that have been longtime Apple fanboys, and like since the Apple iPhone 1, they've bought nothing but Apple. And now when they buy their new iPhone, or when they go out and buy their new phone, they're looking at Samsung. They're looking at different alternatives now, which wouldn't have happened 5 years ago. In your opinion, what has kind of caused Apple's fall from superfan status, and what can they do, or maybe if there's any lessons that they can learn from Samsung coming back from the exploding phone fiasco, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think what has happened there is some would probably argue that there's still quite a big number of super fans for that follow Apple. So people will follow Apple for a very long time because Apple hits a certain point. Apple's brand, if you take a look at it, is really about prestige and being almost top of the line. And that's really what they've targeted. Because when you target people's significance, people will always buy. But what has hurt Apple is what I think is a lack of transparency. So the incidents that you talk about in Samsung's case versus what Apple has done, Samsung, in my opinion, and I don't know all of the details, but I think they handled the situation fairly well. They did a number of recalls. They were very transparent about the communication. I know it was a big hoopla. Like, you couldn't go on an airplane if you had a Samsung phone at that time. So they had to respond, obviously, immediately. But they were transparent about it. And what I think Apple has really not done so well is transparency. And they haven't been really open with all of their clients and customers when it comes to what their end goal is. Like, what is Apple really trying to achieve at the end of the day? And in my personal opinion, and I'm just going to spit out what I think, is they're the first company that's going to hit $1 trillion in valuation. Like, that is, you know, they're huge, and they got their eye on the target. So I think they're going to do whatever they can to make that dollar. And I think they've strayed away from their core values. Apple was really, Apple first started, they were really about the odd guy, going against the grain, being an individual, being unique. And now what I think they've done is they've just gone to the normal corporate average feel, where they're so big right now that they've strayed away from their values. So I think there's those two things. One is, I don't think that they're on with their values anymore. And B, I don't think that they're transparent. It's a very similar story to Walmart. If you take a look at Walmart's story, Walmart actually started to help the average everyday person, to bring goods and services to them at an affordable price. And that's what the original owner wanted to do. And as long as he was alive, they stuck true to the values. And as soon as he passed, the people that took on Walmart after that strayed away from them. And that's what is hurting Walmart as well. Because in the previously, cities were advocates for Walmarts to open up there. They were lobbying to have Walmarts open up. Now, if a Walmart is going to open up in a certain city, you have people sitting there and protesting. And that's what may happen with Apple as well. I think they've just gotten too big and their heads have grown too big for their own good.
Yeah, it's kind of like an equilibrium to the marketplace where if you serve your fans and you turn your fan your super or you turn your customers into super fans, it can help your business grow and explode. But as soon as you forget about how important that is, it can spell out dire, disastrous results for your business.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So, man, this has been a fantastic conversation. For people that want to know more, maybe check out your book, check out your website. Where can they go to find out more about Pradeep Sangha?
So you can go on my website, pradeepsangha.com. That's probably the simplest way. Or you can find me on Facebook, Pradeep Sangha as well, or Instagram. And I'll spell it out here. It's P-U-R-D-E-E-P. And the last name is Sangha, S-A-N-G-H-A.
Awesome. Pradeep, thank you so much for coming on. This has been a fantastic interview. And like I said, this is the next level stuff. This is the majority of what people are talking about gets people to the point where then they need to come see you and find how they can take it to that next level.
Absolutely. Awesome. I appreciate being on here. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. And Pre-Market Squad, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Pradeep Sangha, and check out his website, pradeepsangha.com. And we will catch you next time. All right, Free Market Squad, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Pradeep Sangha. And I have to let you know about something before we're out of here. So Pradeep put together a free PDF cheat sheet on how to get customers and clients that rave about your business. He calls it the Superfans Cheat Sheet. And you can get that over at howtocreatesuperfans.com/bonus. If you download this cheat sheet, you'll discover ways to build customer loyalty, how to stand out from your competition, how to attract the best clients and customers, how to get your customers to do your selling for you, and a whole lot more. So that's one thing that I wanted to tell you about. The other thing that I wanted to tell you about that I'm super excited about is I actually took Pradeep on as a client, and we've started a podcast. It's called the Superfans Podcast, and so far we've recorded 8 episodes, and it is phenomenal. It's all about the tiny little tweaks that you can make in your business to get your customers coming back to buy from you over and over again, to get your customers going out there and singing your praises, doing your marketing for you. Man, the guy is just a wealth of knowledge. If you thought what he laid out in this podcast was good, I cannot wait for you to hear his podcast, which is going to be called the Superfans Podcast. So we've actually put together a 2-part bonus. The bonus that I told you about, the PDF cheat sheet that reveals 3 simple ways to get your clients and customers to rave about your business, plus a sneak preview of episode 0 of Pradeep's new podcast is available exclusively to you. And all you have to do to get both the cheat sheet and the sneak preview episode of Pradeep's upcoming podcast is head on over to howtocreatesuperfans.com/bonus and download the cheat sheet and get access to the sneak preview of the new podcast. That's howtocreatesuperfans.com/bonus. All right, I'm out of here. Deuces!